Welcome, everybody, to Juwanza for Life. My name is Juwanza, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. Great to be back with you again today. And to all of the new listeners, I always want to start off by welcoming you. Welcome to the show. Health, Wealth, and Divine has always been about sharing information with you that can help to improve your life, whether it's through entrepreneurship, whether it's through holistic health. We endeavor to share information with you that you can use. There's no sense in, they say information is power, but it's only powerful if you can use it, right? So that is why we do the show, to make sure that you, specifically if you're tuned into the show for the entrepreneur segment, can have information that you can use. And for those of you who have been following the show, you know that every 2 weeks we have a special guest by the name of Professor Joseph T. Geiger. He's an author, he's an entrepreneur, he's a teacher, and we're blessed to have him on our show. He's written two awesome books. The book that we're going to be discussing tonight is titled Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Again, that's Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. This is the fourth edition. The book just keeps on growing and growing and growing. And we're going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle. Again, to all of the new listeners, if you're just tuning in for the very first time, I want to invite you to scroll down the archives. We archive all the shows. Professor Geiger, again, is a regular on the show, and we are in the midst of a series. When I say a series, we're actually going through the book principle by principle, and we're up to part seven in this particular principle. The principle is how entrepreneurs view financial statements, and this is part seven. So if you know there's seven parts to a principle, then that principle must be very important. Okay, so we've been taking our time going through the principles, to exhaust them, to make sure that you get every drop of information that you can. We're going to squeeze every ounce of information out of each principle that we can, and we're on principle number 34. But again, this is going to be part seven. So let me introduce Professor Geiger, because, again, we got a great show lined up for you. Currently retired, Professor Joseph Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which preceded his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And in order to help people like you and me succeed in business, he wrote Entrepreneurial Success, 101 Practical Business Principles. And again, the book keeps growing and growing. It's subtitled The Road to the Top. Professor Geiger now lectures and teaches seminars at the University of Richmond, located in Richmond, where he currently resides. And again, as I mentioned, we're very fortunate to have him as a regular on the show. Professor, welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine. Is always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to another fabulous show.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Professor, before we get started, for those of again who've been following the show, they know that you come on every 2 weeks, and I know you keep abreast of what's happening in the business world. There's been a great big, it's big news, in the business world. Any thoughts on Sears? We just heard recently in the last couple of days that their Sears has been undergoing some serious changes. Any thoughts on Sears and their current situation?
Well, I have two. I'm old enough that I can remember when Sears was the store, when you could buy everything from a paperclip to an entire house from Sears. So it saddens me to see them have severe difficulties. Whether or not they'll be able to survive this one, this is Chapter 11, which is reorganization. Whether they'll be able to come out of it, I don't know. But it certainly saddens me to see that happen. However, that's on the downside, on the sad side. On the very much more positive side, there's another little one that you may not have noticed. Juanza, and I don't know the how much truth there is to it. I'm sure there's some. But there was an article published just 3 or 4 days ago that said that in the last year and a half that black entrepreneurs have increased their rate of activity by 400% in the last year and a half over what they were. And admittedly, they're taking probably a 3 or 4 year period, starting a year and a half, 2 years ago, which was a very dark period, a difficult period for startups. And now this is a much more sunny time. But nevertheless, they talked about the numbers of new entrepreneurial ventures by black entrepreneurs has increased by 400%. That's, as an entrepreneur, I find that just beyond exciting.
That's interesting. That is very interesting, and that's within the last year and a half, you say?
That's in the last year and a half. So presumably what they did, they took a period probably 2 years ago and plucked a year and a half out of that period and said, let's say that there were 100. Well, I'll just pick a figure that's easy to deal with. 100 new black entrepreneurs took the plunge starting 4 years ago and ending 2.5 years ago. And then in the last year and a half, there have been 400. And again, I don't know the veracity of this, whether this is believable or not. I think there has certainly been a very substantial increase. But it really, I just find that so terribly exciting that a group that has not been increasing at the same rate as others is just scurrying ahead of everybody else. So congratulations for those who did it. And, but I'm not surprised because nowadays the number of entrepreneurs, the IRS has done a study that has been going on for many, many, many years. And basically what it has said is that the last figures I have ended about 2 years ago. And at that time, what they said was that a third of all income earners, that is people who essentially receive money from something, from a job, from a salary, from whatever, a third of all of those will be entrepreneurs at some time during their life. And that number, that percentage is increasing. Increasing to some extent because of electronic media, because of all kinds of things on the internet that were available now, and 20 years ago it didn't exist. So there's a way for people to get to start their own businesses today that when I was first going, it not only didn't exist, nobody ever thought it was possible because the internet didn't exist and nothing about it existed. So if you wanted to start a business, you essentially started a brick and mortar store. Today, there are millions of small businesses that are not brick and mortar stores, and therefore the cost of either renting or building a brick and mortar store is not part of the equation. So if you had to set aside $10,000 for the first 10 months worth of rent on a place, and then you had to come up with the rest of the money to actually start the business. Well, today you don't have to come up with that $10,000. And not only that, but your customer base is in the billions. It's not who walks by your store in the hundreds, it's in the billions of people. My daughter, when she had her first child, bought a necklace of beads. because little babies grab and chew on everything. And she wanted something that her little child, if she grabbed it and chewed on it, didn't hurt her. And so she bought these beads. They had a heavy a cord that held them into a necklace. And they, instead of painted, they were dyed. And they were dyed with food dye. So a kid could chew on them and it wouldn't hurt them. Well, they were made in the Ukraine. And she bought it online. She had no idea where they were made. But in fact, when she got it, you look at the package, it was sent from Russia. This is wild. Here's a woman in Russia who sold something to somebody in Washington, D.C., USA. Isn't that something? So it's I am just, I can't tell you how excited I am to hear that so many young black men and women have started their own businesses, and if it didn't increase by 400%, it increased by a whole lot. So whoopee
well,
for them.
Well, did they break it down into sectors so you could kind of know what type of businesses it
no,
was?
No, this was just kind of a, no, they did not. But, I would suspect that a great number of them have online businesses of one kind or another, and they may be part-time businesses, but who knows? I mean, you know, they start as a part-time business, and there's some very, very large businesses out there today, such as Google, that started as a part-time business selling a program to college kids who were in the same dorm, and Google's pretty big now. And that's how it
started. Well, we want to make sure that those businesses that were started, those 400, that 400% increase, and even those that, regardless of wherever you fall in the on the planet in terms of race, if you started a business, we want to make sure that you stay in business. And so we recommend that you get this book, because that the important number is, okay, after a year, are you still in business? Because half of all businesses fold within the first year. So we want to make sure that you stay in business. And so we encourage you, the book that Professor Geiger has written, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top, is a guide. It's a compass to kind of help navigate you through the sometimes rough waters of business to ensure that you can stay in business. It's great if you start, but it's even greater if you stay, correct, Professor?
You got that. Just remember, if you go out of business, it's your money that got lost.
Mm-hmm.
Not mine, not Juwan's, but yours.
Mm-hmm.
So
don't do that.
Learn what you're doing before you do it.
You made me think about something when you mentioned the opening of the entrepreneur starting out. What are your thoughts on multi-level marketing? Because oftentimes people that are engaged in multi-level marketing, when promoting the idea, suggest that it's your business, okay, that it's, you operate it as your own business. I mean, you can get your own business cards, you can, and it's promoted that way. What are your thoughts on multi-level marketing?
Well, the only thing I can tell people who start out, keep it as simple as possible to start with. Complexity will come all in good time. But complexity is where you lose money. The more complex it is, the more difficult it is to keep from losing money, to keep control over the thing. So keep it simple And just always remember, which you probably will. I don't need to tell you. Once you start into it, those who haven't done it, they don't see it. But once you start it, you will find out that it's your money, and you're the one who is going to take the real hit. Even if you have investors, you're the one that's going to take the big hit. They may take a hit, but if they're investors, chances are they invest X dollars with you, and if they lose the X dollars, it isn't going to affect them. They're still going to go on vacation. They're still going to live in their fancy house and have fancy wine and steaks on Saturday. It's you that won't. So keep it as simple as you possibly can while you're getting going here?
Well, what I meant was, for example, that it's a person that's actually starting the company, but for those who may be coming on board, like, for example, what was the big one? Amway, I believe it was a multi-level marketing company. There were others. They had A.L. Williams, I believe, was one, selling insurance, Term Life, I believe it was, and others. You know, but somebody just getting in, not the founders, but the person that's actually getting in. Would you view that as an entrepreneurial venture of sorts? Would that fall under the category of entrepreneurship in your eyes?
Well, yeah, it does, because all of those type of thing, whether they're Amway type things, or you're an independent insurance agent, or you have your own Mickey D's, whatever it is. It's still, if you go under, the big company is they're just going to replace you and find somebody else to work your territory. So it very much is an entrepreneurial venture. And the way those things work is you get paid when you sell something, and not when you just sell it, but when you actually deliver it. And then you get paid. But you don't get paid until that happens. So yeah, absolutely. And it has the advantage of getting in that it's a lot easier to get in, and there is less complexity to it. It costs less. You have only yourself to worry about, usually, to start with. You usually don't have anybody under you. But it's a great way of putting your toe in the water and being an entrepreneur. But the bottom line is you don't get paid until you do something. You sell something, and then you deliver it, whether it's a service or a product.
Well, everybody, we are about to dive in to this awesome book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Again, we're going chapter by chapter, principle by principle. We're on chapter 4, and we're going to be starting today's show with principle number 35. Okay,
yeah,
and that is 37, I'm sorry.
37.
Correct, 37.
No.
Plan your work for the long term and work your plan for the short term. I'll repeat that. Plan your work for the long term and work your plan for the short term. Professor?
Yeah, let me, before I get into this, this is part of a six-part planning section. And let me just say what the first parts of it are so that the listeners can follow along a little better. Step number one is decisions should be data-driven. In other words, make decisions on hard facts, not what you think or what you hope for, but as hard facts as you can possibly get. The second step is define your problem. The third step is to set goals. The fourth step is to create a plan that solves the problem and minimizes the cost. And the fifth step is design a cash flow forecast plan. And the last step is work your plan. So that's where we're at. We're at plan your work for the long term and work your plan for the short term. So with that said, we've already essentially decided on how to do the plan is set, and now you're having to execute the plan. And one should remember that plans are no darn good unless you can execute it. So if you have a plan that really looks like it'll work out fine, but in order to execute the plan, you have to have $100,000 and you only have 70, you're treading on some real thin ice, because in all likelihood, if your plan calls for 100 and you only have 70, you're going to run out of money and you won't be able to execute your plan. So you plan it for the long term, you execute it in the short term. What do I mean by that? I mean that you execute it virtually every day. what I used to do is I did a 3-year plan. The first year month by month, the second and third year quarter by quarter. And then once I had that done and I had a really good handle on how much I needed month by month, then I would start by dividing the first month, we'll just say January, into four parts for the first, second, and third and fourth week of January. So I had it down to a week. In other words, what do I need to do this week in order to execute the plan? Let's not worry about next week because we'll get to next week in 5 to 7 days. But what are we going to have to do this week? And once you get it down that tightly, then you can decide, well, what do I have to do this week? If I have employees, what do each employee has to do or each work group has to do in order to meet our plan? And then so you go through that, you tell everybody what it is that they have to do on Monday, and then by Wednesday you have another meeting, and the second meeting on Wednesday is essentially to say, well, how you doing? Did you get Monday done? Did you get Tuesday done? Are we on target to get our whole week done, the things we had to do, and done on time? And if they're not going to be done on time, what do we need to do to get it on time? The purpose of this is to make changes when they're baby step changes. If you don't do that, what will happen is you just rock along, and after about 4 or 5 months, you pull your plan out, and you say, my goodness, I'm not even close. And so you toss the plan away because there's no way of getting there. The way you get there is to make sure that every week you get that part that needs to be done that week done. And you make little baby steps. The way you do that is to make sure that your plan is as precise as you can possibly make it, and then make those changes or do those jobs, and as you go through, you're going to learn whether or not was our plan realistic. If you have a dress shop and you say, well, I needed to sell $10,000 worth of inventory, did I do that? What inventory did I sell? Are we running out of one kind of dress but not other kinds? And so on. So you have to be very, very precise on your planning. And this is a basic mistake that virtually everybody makes. If you go to Microsoft and go to their spreadsheet area, you'll see that they have a business plan. And basically, the business plan is for 1 year, and it says, how much will you sell for that year, and what will you sell it for, what are your expenses for that year. And when you see that, that is totally worthless, because there is no way that you can be precise enough to have an executable plan. So that's why you plan your work for the long term, for the whole year. And then you break it down into months, and then you break it further down into weeks. And how are we doing this week? Are we on target? And if you've done a good enough job, you will find out whether you're on target. And my experience is when I first started in business, I didn't do this. I was like everybody else. I just kind of winged it. And fortunately, I didn't go broke, but it certainly wasn't because I was a good business person. And once I started to do this, the first year I did it, I more than doubled my profits, and I didn't sell any more stuff. Our sales were essentially the same, and we doubled the profits, and we didn't have any surprises. And then the second year, we sold a little more stuff, and I doubled the profits again. We just got more efficient. So that's why it's so important.
Well, Professor, what would you say to somebody who's listening and they've been following the shows and they're listening to you and they admit and agree with you on the techniques used and required to start and maintain and run an efficient business? They agree with you wholeheartedly, but they say to themselves, well, Professor, I mean, although a lot of these techniques and principles were gained through trial and error, he still has the experience of graduating from the School of Business at Denver, you know what I mean? He still knows certain things that the average person maybe just deciding to start their own business might not have the business background that you have, because the business background certainly couldn't hurt, you know, the your approach even to entrepreneurship, your approach to business, and even maybe even knowing what to do, where to look, what to, you know, what you might have needed to do. But let's say, for example, you take somebody who may have, you know, let's say either dropped out of college or maybe dropped out of high school, you know, mm-hmm. and they decide they want to become an entrepreneur, and they're listening to you, and they're talking about, they're listening to the principles, and they're like, man, this is very overwhelming. This is a lot of stuff, and this is, you know, dealing in a lot of areas that I have no skills in. Is your position that as the owner and principal operator of the business, because the most of the money that's involved is yours, especially if you, of course, if you've got skin in the game, the money that's mm-hmm. going to be lost is going to be your money that's going to be lost, the owner's money that's going to be lost, mm-hmm. the founder's money that's going to be lost, that if you don't have skills in these areas, that you better obtain them quick before you start or hire somebody that does?
Well, you need to know them. And quite frankly, when I graduated from University of Denver with a degree in business administration, I didn't know anywhere near as much as somebody who just read my book. When they got through reading my book, and let's say they made it to a sophomore in high school, and then they became a carpenter. And they were pretty skilled as a carpenter, and they decided, hey, instead of swinging a hammer from somebody else, why don't I go see if I can get a small job on my own and start swinging a hammer for me? If they just read my book, they would know way more about starting, what it takes to start a small business, than I did after 4 years at the University of Denver. Because when I did it, I graduated in 1960, and I never heard the word entrepreneur. Nothing in the curriculum that I took, and I wanted, at the time, I wanted to start my own business. I never took a single course about a small business, and the reason was they didn't have one. The assumption was that you were going to graduate from the University of Denver's School of Business and go to work for IBM or General Motors or somebody like that. The idea of starting your own business never crossed the curriculum mind. So I had to learn this by trial and error, and I can assure you that the trials tended to be very expensive because of the errors. And if somebody, like I say, who can read and only made it as a sophomore in high school, and then for whatever reason they had to go out and start making a living, they would know a lot more about how to start a business than I did when I graduated from college. A whole lot more.
Well, the skills are going to have to be obtained, and they're necessary because, again, as Professor's fond of saying, the money you lose will be your own. So you definitely want to get this book. Again, it's full of information, usable information that you can, you know, benefit from at a very affordable, minimal cost to you. Can save you money and can make you money at the same time. Professor, before we move to the next principle, you mentioned small business. Can we define that for a moment? Is the word small business, is that based on an annual revenue determination?
Well, yeah,
if
you look at what the IRS says is a small business, it's based on two things. One's it's based on the number of people, 500 people or less, and is classified as a small people, or let me replay, less than 500 people, 499 people or less that you employ. And then there is a dollar figure, and it depends upon what kind of business you're in. So there's a dollar figure if you're a jeweler. There's a dollar figure if you are selling insurance. There's another one if you're a carpenter or a contractor, and so on. They have a whole bunch of them. But basically, the one that is kind of singular is 499 people or less. So if you start with one person, you're a small business. If you have 499 people and you sell $1 billion worth of stuff a year, it depends upon what you're doing, you're probably still a small business as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the book is really designed for if you just start for yourself. And you did mention one thing, and I want to really stress that. The principles on the book are designed to actually be able to do. I wrote the book when I first started to teach entrepreneurship, and one of the things that was just infuriating for me was the stuff that the textbooks gave. As an entrepreneur, the first question you ask yourself, how do I do that? I mean, this sounds like a great idea to make the business run better. How do I do it? And in most cases, the answer was, well, you really can't. So what I wrote, that's why there's 105 principles. So there's a principle, for example, of if you want to have a roadside sign, how do you do a roadside sign? Well, you can waddle down to somebody who sells roadside signs and say, here's my checkbook, write something out. I don't like to do that. I want to know what I'm doing. So how do you do a roadside sign? It's real simple. You're allowed one picture and seven words. If you have more than seven words, it won't be read. You can have less than seven words, but you can't have more. You can have one picture, but you can't have two. Two pictures get confusing. So you're allowed one picture and seven words. Now, you've never done a roadside sign, Juanza. Do you think you could sketch out a sign, say, as a motel? With one picture and seven words? Of course you can. It will take you a while because the first time you write it, you'll have 27 words. But you keep cutting them down. Is this word really necessary? And pretty soon you get down to seven, and you have one picture and seven words, and voila, you have a roadside sign that will be a billboard that will actually be read. And if you don't believe me, folks, listen to it. Next time you drive down a road, now don't have a crash for goodness sake, but glance at the signs and see if I'm not telling you the truth. I am. And the other 104 principles are pretty much the same. They are things that you can actually do. You can execute these principles. So if you never graduated from high school, you have a skill, you think you want to start a business, for God's sakes, before you do it, buy my book, spend a week or so reading it, and then do what it tells you. It tells you how, step by little baby step, how to do a business plan. For goodness sakes, do it. Now, it may take you a month or two, and in my classes, I have people saying, well, I've never done a business plan before. Okay, that's fine, but you also have never run a business before. And I can assure you, however difficult it is to do the business plan, profitably running that business is going to be multiple times more difficult. So learn how to do your business plan and then try to follow it.
You know, while we're here on this point, Professor, I think it's important to drive home the point. If it hasn't been driven home in this show and previous shows with you, that there's a lot involved in running and operating your own business. It's more than just having the skill to do the job or the desire to do the job. I mean, you could love numbers and figure, okay, I'm going to open up my own accounting firm. You know, you could be good at numbers. You could be a great accountant. But there's more to running an accounting firm than being a good accountant. You know, there's more to, you know, running a auto body shop than being good with cars. I mean, there's so much more. There's so much more involved in it. There may be lawyers involved. I mean, there may be contracts involved. I mean, you got to really know and be functional in a lot of different areas in order to be successful in business. It's more than just being good at what you do. You know, there are just a lot of different aspects to business that prior to being in business that you may have just never thought of because you never had to, you know. So I think it's important that you get this book, okay, because all of the many of the issues that are going to come up in business are in this book, okay. And if there are more, if you get this book, there's 105 that you don't have to worry about, okay.
Yep.
So I just stress that because there are so many people that are, you know, have great, you know, wonderful skills, gifts even, to do certain things and proceed with starting a business. But yet, many of the people that are among the half that fail within the first year may be very skilled people, may be very intelligent people, yet they still failed. There's a reason for that. So if you want to minimize the odds of you failing and you want to be in the number of those that succeed, increase the odds, stack the odds in your favor, get the book. And, Professor, matter of fact, while we're here right now at the halfway point, why not, let's tell them how they can get your book, because they're going to need it. How do they get the book?
Well, they get the book direct from me if they want at theroadtothetop.com. And you just say, buy the book, and it'll fill it out and fill out your credit card, and it notifies me. I send it to you, and I sign the inside cover. Or you can go to Amazon and look up Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles. Make sure you put the last 105 Business Principles, because there's lots and lots of Entrepreneurial Success books. But you put that in, it takes you right to it. It has a picture of a winding road in a mountain that's pretty spectacular. Actually, it's from China. It's where the picture is taken. And you can get it right there. The only difference is that if you get it from Amazon, they can't sign it as the author. I can. Other than that, go for it. So
you can also get cash flow forecast at that same.
Yeah, you can get a cash flow forecast. You can get one lots of places. I have one that's 26 pages long. That sounds like an awful lot, but it's a fill in the blank. And if you have a very involved business, such as let's say a new Ford dealership, it will handle that. And if you have a taco stand or a building materials company or an electrician, your electrician, it can handle that too. It's just if it's a simple business, instead of many, many pages to fill out, you've got the same number of pages, but you don't have very much to fill out because it's simple. And to put a underline what you just said, ever since I was a kid, in business, I heard that restaurants went broke at a frightening rate. And the reason they do is nothing about the restaurant. It's just there's so many people who think they know how to cook and may do, and maybe they do know how to cook, and maybe they're terrific cooks. But running a restaurant is a little bit of knowing how to cook and a whole lot of knowing how to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know how to cook but you haven't figured out the business part, you're probably going to go broke. And if you don't know how to cook, maybe you know how to hire people who do. And then you'll succeed if you can do the rest. So it is very, very important to know the business stuff. And as I said before, if you just read my book, you're going to know way, way more about how to successfully run a small business than I did after 4 years of college. Way more.
Also, the book is principles. These principles are not just for business. They're also for life as well. I mean, there may come a situation that you have to address, and you may find yourself using, and I've done it, using one or more of these principles to deal with a life situation. It has absolutely nothing to do with business, but the principle still applies. So
absolutely.
You get double.
Yep.
You know, so definitely get the book. You won't regret it, and I guarantee you, refer it to someone else. Again, we're going through the book principle by principle. We're in chapter 4, and moving on to principle number 38. A great plan becomes a disaster when poorly executed. A great plan becomes a disaster when poorly executed. Professor?
Yeah, let me first define what executed means. If you're a single-person business, it's real simple. You know who's going to execute. It's you, nobody else. But if you have 10 employees, who's going to execute it? Who are we talking about here? The owner? Yes, we are. How about the workers? Well, as it turns out, yes, we are. And one of the big mistakes that businesses make, even ones that have been at it for a long time, is they don't tell their employees, the people who are actually doing the work, what the heck the plan is. And ask yourself, if you're out there in life and you have a job working for somebody, I don't care whether it's you're an electrician with a small company, or you're working for AT&T or Home Depot, have they told you what their yearly plan is, so that you can understand it and execute it and know why? And I'll bet you that 95% of the people who are working for companies would answer, no, they have not. I am in the dark. I have no idea why I'm doing the things I do the way I do them, or the way they told me to do them, because they haven't shared that with me. Well, if you have one employee, or 100, or 1,000. I've never had a company that had 1,000, but I've had several of them that have over 100. It's really helpful if you have all of your employees pulling on the rope in the same direction and knowing why they do it. And if they do that, they will see things you don't see, because they're pulling on their little part of the rope, and they know their little part of the rope way better than you do, because they're actually doing it. And whether they're, again, are an electrician, or they're in a manufacturing company, or they're selling stuff, whatever it is, they know what they're doing in intimate detail. And they're going to see things you won't see, because they know it so well. And if you can get them to help you run the business, your business is going to run way, way better. The mistake that a lot of business people make is they think they're the only smart sucker around. Well, they're not. You may know more than your employees do about how to structure a loan for your benefit, but if you're manufacturing widgets, they know a whole lot more about how you manufacture each part of the widget than you do. And remember that manufacturing the widgets is really the big part of your business. Structuring the loan so you can buy the materials and handle the people, sure, that's important too. But if they will help you manufacture the widgets, you'll do them way, way better. And the way to get them to do that is to involve them in the business plan and show them what you're doing and why you're doing it and ask for their help. You'd be surprised. If you want somebody to help you, ask them. And you'll be absolutely shocked how many people will say, sure, I'll be happy to help. Because what are you doing? What are you saying to that person? You're saying, I value your judgment. I value your mind. I value what you're saying. Help me. And boy, they will do that.
You know, Professor, this just your comments there made me think about a show that was on television. I don't know if they still do it, and I'm sure if you haven't seen it, you would probably enjoy it. You may have seen it. Have you seen Undercover Boss?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think about that? I think that's clever. You know,
That's really great for a big company, because you get out there and know what it's like. What's it really like to run that forklift? What's it really like to do all these things? And in most cases, in a bigger company, the boss has no damned idea what it's like. They've never done it. And they think, hell, it's grunt work. It's easy. Well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it isn't easy. And if you don't think it's easy and you're running a forklift, just wait till you run the forks through an expensive machine and run it and see how easy you think it is. I've seen that several times, and sometimes it's a great training aid for you, to see how it happens. There's a school here in Richmond, J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, and they recently got a new president. And one of the things the president did, and I laugh about it because I really think it's really funny, she went down and acted like she was a student wanting to register. She had a problem. And nobody paid any attention to her. She walked around there for a while. Nobody asked her anything. And then she asked a question or so, and they told her to go get in line. Well, I don't think that's going to work out too well for those folks down there, because she came back, and I know her secretary, and her secretary said, "You talk about mad as a wet head." Oh boy, was she ever! And those folks down there had just been accustomed to treating the students like dirt. Well, the students are your customers. Now, I'm sure most of academia doesn't think of students as customers, but I can assure you they are your customers, and you better treat them like customers.
Everybody, my special guest today is Professor Joseph Geiger, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. We've got one more principle in this chapter, 39, don't borrow money for longer than you must. Professor, do you think you can cover that within the time that we have left, or do we need
to carry that over? Well, first of all, pay off the loan as quickly as you can. The trouble with that is a lot of loans are structured so that it is easy to make a monthly payment or a quarterly payment, however they're structured. But it's not easy if you want to go faster than that. So what I would tell you to start with when you get a business loan, if there is any possible way, try to do it as a line of credit. And the way a line of credit works, I'll tell you, if virtually every car agency, their inventory is financed with a line of credit. So when they get a car in, let's say the car cost them $25,000, is their cost plus transportation. Well, the bank will normally pay the $25,000, and the car agency needs to pay the line of credit. And then in about a month, in the case of cars, the bank says, "Hey, have you sold that little sucker?" And if the answer is no, then they say, "Well, we need 10 or 20%. Now, if you have sold it, you better have paid off that line of credit, that portion of the line of credit. When I was in the airplane business, I had a $4 million line of credit. After I'd been at it, and eventually that rose to a $10 million line of credit, and we had three locations. And I needed to keep up on whenever an airplane was sold and the day it was delivered, whether it was delivered from Long Beach, California, or Van Nuys or Hayward or Seattle, any of those four places, we had to pay off that airplane right then. But the neat thing about it is that your line of credit can expand or contract. So if you have a line of credit and you get a sudden windfall, you sell a bunch of stuff, maybe it's not covered by the line of credit, but you have $10,000 or $20,000 sitting around, you can pay down that line of credit by $10,000 or $20,000. And if next Tuesday you need more money, you expand the line of credit by $10,000 or $20,000, whatever you need. So it goes up and down. The reason that's important is because commercial loans, they charge interest per day. Now, they don't tell you that, but that's how they actually charge it. So that if you have, in my case, where I had $10 million and maybe I had eight of it out, if I could pay $4 million down for a week, it was fairly serious money. And so I would pay it down for a week. And if I needed three of the four back the next week, I would notify the bank, hey, a bill's going to come in, a draft is going to come in, and so we're going to need that. Automatically, boom, it was there. And so I once I learned how to do that, I cut my lending costs way, way down. Because what would happen is we just never carried a whole lot of cash. In the, you know, we had enough to do our daily stuff. We kept real close track on what was outstanding. When we wrote a check, we made sure that the funds were there because we knew the check would clear in anything from 1 to 3 days. And so you wanted to make sure you didn't bounce any checks. But if all the checks came in, maybe the bank account had $4,000 or $5,000 in it. And if none of the checks came in, maybe it had $50,000 in it. But there was $45,000 of checks out. So,
right.
You know, that way we did not have money sitting around that we were, one, not collecting any interest on, and on the other side, we had loans out there that we had to pay interest that we didn't need to have. And what you don't ever want to pay that line of credit clear off, so you can pay it down to $100. And you keep $100, so you're paying interest on $100, and you may be paying 6% per year. So it's going to cost you $6 a year to have that $100 there. But if all of a sudden you needed $20,000, boom, you have it. And you don't have to sign any. So if there's any possible way of making your loan a line of credit, do that. Because that way you can not pay borrow money any longer than you absolutely must. And you can do it on a daily basis because that's how you're paying interest. Like I say, the banks tell you about 6% per year, but actually they charge you per day.
You know, Professor, we're going to have to do a show just on the role of interest. You know, what it is, you know, the role of it, break it down, dissect it, dive into it, paying it, collecting it, you know, because that's a big, big part of business. I mean, especially you're talking about loans and you're talking cash and you're talking about, you know, you want to, as a business owner, you want to, I mean, you said something very important. You want to, you don't want to have money just sitting around that you could be collecting interest on and not collecting interest on. I mean, because interest, I mean, that could amount to a lots and lots and lots of money. I mean, that's
banks. Let me give you another example. We had in one of the businesses I had, when I financed it, I got $5 million. So I had a lot of money in the bank. And what we did is we put much of it in jumbo CDs, but we still had maybe $100,000 of cash in the bank. And what my accountant did is he told the bank every night sweep our account and put it in overnight securities. Well, what an overnight security is, banks have to have so much money in cash at the end of the day. And if they don't have that in cash, they borrow it. But they only borrow it from 5 o'clock at night until 9 o'clock the next day. And they borrow it. It's called overnight securities. So we would put all of our extra money, they would take our account down to $1. And so at night, our bank account had $1 in it. And during the day, when I couldn't do that, it had maybe $200,000 in it. Well, by doing that, we made $32,000 in 1 year.
Wow. Not bad.
Yeah, bad it was pretty neat stuff. And we made a lot of money. And all we did was sweep our account every night. So, and if you had, we didn't even have to tell them how much money to sweep. Whatever there was, they would sweep it down to $1. And then, so if I sold an airplane and the cash got in, let's say the airplane was $110,000. I had a $10,000 deposit and I got $100,000. So I got the $100,000 in there. They swept the account. That $100,000 was overnight. And then the next day, it would be back in the account and we could use it for whatever we wanted. So, yeah, interest could be a big, big deal. And you just need to know how to do it.
Wow. Everybody, you see how important this information is. I mean, just this last hour of sitting and sharing with Professor Geiger has been so beneficial, and you can see how important it is. I mean, because the book, think about it. We just go over the principle. Book, there are examples. The principle is broken down. He gives real life, real business scenarios in the examples in the book. Okay, so if you're enjoying the conversation, you're going to really enjoy the book as well. So, again, let's tell them how they can get it. Again, Professor, if you don't mind.
Get it at Amazon, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, or direct from me. You can get it at theroadtothetop.com.
And with that, of course, you can get the cash flow forecast.
Get the cash flow forecast, and you can get my other book. If you're just starting and you're a junior in high school and not sure what you want to do, or you have one of those in your family or a friend, you can get a little book called oh my goodness, I went blank. That's what you get for getting old. You can get Finding a Career for Life. And it's a book that will tell you if you're a high school graduate, what options you have. If you have a PhD, what options you have. If you're not sure whether you want to go into the medical field or be a contractor, it tells you what options you have and what the income potential is. It even tells you what people think of their jobs. Some jobs are, people really think a lot. If you're a nurse, you think that you're doing God's work. And if you're a programmer, you don't think very much of your job, oddly enough. I thought that you would. But if you're a computer nerd, computer nerds for some reason don't think that their jobs are all that valuable.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised at that one. Yep.
Well, so get the book, Finding a Career for Life. Again, listen, everybody, we've got the holidays coming up. And both of these books would be excellent gifts. So if you've got entrepreneurs in your family or just young people in your family, or even if you're not young and you just want to know what the stats are, again, one of Professor's principles is all decisions should be data-driven. And once you have the data in your hands and you can actually look at it in your hands and see it in black and white, then you can make a better decision, a more intelligent decision based on statistics and not just, oh, I feel like I might want to do this, or, you know, I'll try this and see how this works. No, no more hitting and missing, no more shooting arrows in the dark. You know, get these books again and increase the odds that you will be successful. I mean, Finding a Career for Life, oh my God, that book alone can really help chart your life. I mean, because there's a lot of statistics in there that could end up determining what you do for a living, which in turn is going to, impact how much you earn for a living, which of course is going to impact where you live, the quality of life that you have so during your working life. So definitely get these books. Again, you won't regret it. Professor, thank you so much for another hour of knowledge, wisdom in business. Again, it's always a great opportunity to speak with you, and I look forward to our next show. Everybody, don't forget the archives, because if you enjoyed this, this was part seven of one chapter. I'm sorry, yes, of one chapter, okay? So this was part seven, okay? So looking forward to the next one. We'll be starting off in 2 weeks on chapter five, buying a business. You ever wanted to buy a business? Well, we're going to get into all of that in 2 weeks, okay, on Tuesday, though, okay? Come back next week on Tuesday. I'm sorry, 2 weeks from now on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Professor, any parting words for our listeners? Thanks again for another great show.
Oh, not really. Looking forward to it next time, and hope you enjoyed the show.
Awesome. Take care, Professor. I'll see you then. I'll be talking to you, of course, before then. Matter of fact, I'll probably give you a call on Friday so we can talk, and then we'll be back with everybody else on Tuesday, the following Tuesday, to get back with Chapter 5, Buying a Business. So looking forward to our next conversation. Professor, thanks again, as always. Thank you for your time. Great show.
Yep. Right. Bye for now.
All right. Sure. Everybody, that's Professor Joseph Geiger. Again, make sure you get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. This book just keeps on growing and growing and growing. Again, the principles are not just for business, but they are for business and life. So, again, I encourage everybody to get it. If you're serious about entrepreneurship, or you know someone who is, again, with the holidays coming up, it'd be a great gift for somebody, even if it's just a gift for yourself, to have this information so that you're not, again, shooting arrows in the dark, because there's a lot involved in business, a lot. There's, again, like I mentioned, there are lawyers, there are contracts, there are all kinds of things that if you've never done a business before, you had no reason to consider some of the things that you would have to consider as a business owner. You want to increase the odds that you're successful. So, again, join us every 2 weeks on Tuesday from 7 to 8, and by all means, get the book so you can read up, catch up, read ahead, and then call in with your questions. Again, this is a call-in show. You can call in and speak with Professor Geiger while you have him on the air. So for all of you entrepreneurs out there, if you have questions of Professor, all you have to do is just raise your hand, and you do that by pressing 1 if you're listening by phone. If you're listening online, the call-in number is 347-324-5727. So, that being said, hope everybody enjoyed the show. Again, to all of the new listeners, welcome, welcome, welcome. Again, don't forget the archives. Scroll down the archives. You'll be blown away by the shows that you'll have an opportunity to listen to. Again, my name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you?